Southeast Auto Service Centers with 16 locations. I still haven't seen Mike. Have you seen Mike over in production? We're still getting that. I need to get that jingle written.
I did see Mike on Friday.
I've been trying to avoid him because I owe him $500 for writing that jingle.
Oh, so it's... The clog is on your end.
Oh, I see. That's the problem. All right. Bucky's Auto Service Centers with 16 locations. They've been around for, oh, come on. She's got to be 50 years by this point. They're doing a great job. I wonder who the oldest serving mechanic they have in there. You know, working in there, huh? Big party for him when he finally or she finally retires. Thanks, Bucky's Auto Service Centers for sponsoring the town. Matt Gerlach. Yes, it is Mullet Monday. We're playing Christmas songs that we're still trying to find the breaking point for Tom. He had said last Monday, I love all Christmas songs. And Andrew is in there smiling like a Cheshire cat.
Like it's Christmas.
Okay, or like it's right. Christmas. Okay. Magnolia residents have artificial intelligence, and it is a powered surveillance camera that tracks people and cars as they enter into the neighborhood. And experts, what we do without experts, experts caution bias.
Well, sort of, yeah. I mean, I guess the story is that...
Well, that's what it says.
A lot of, yeah. Yes. A lot of people, the thrust of the story isn't focused on bias. That is a concern. It's a civil liberties concern. But the interesting thing about this is a lot of people that can afford it, let's just say, I don't want to say they're rich, but, you know, wealthier than not, are buying these security systems where you see cameras. That's why we get a lot of this security camera footage on individual homes. Uh-huh. And what this particular business has decided is that individual homes, that kind of surveillance is not good enough. What you really need is neighborhood-wide security network. And so this guy offered, he said, I'd like to, you know, bring in this company and do it. And how many people would be out there, you know, willing to pitch in? And he was just flooded with people. We're talking about the Magnolia neighborhood, which is upper end, high end, wealthy neighborhood, great views and all. It's a gorgeous neighborhood. A lot of people said, yes, they would like to do that. So you've heard about porch pirates and all these kinds of things. They want to make sure that they can track down any and everybody that goes into Magnolia. So if we go into Magnolia, we'll be on security cameras.
Yes.
They say one of the key differences and why this is more successful in terms of, finding out who's actually going through their neighborhood is that the AI can detail the license plate number. The most security cameras, you see the car going off, but you're not zeroed in. This AI can allow them to do that, and that's why they argue that it's better. We'll get to the civil liberties concerns in a second, but the other thing is then, though, what do they do with that information? And based on the article's analysis, it sounds like even though they may get somebody's license plate, to prove that there was a crime committed by the people in that license plate takes more than just the security coverage. They took some of this evidence. The neighborhood took some of this evidence to Seattle Police Department, and Mark Wickham acknowledged, well, we haven't really done anything with it.
Uh-huh.
We don't know. They're a little nervous about it because remember when this was at the beginning of our show, like 5 or 6 years ago, Seattle police started putting up these. What are these thingamajiggits on the
well, Murray brought two
poles.
Drones, and what's everybody that? Got upset about
well,
the
yeah,
drones.
Well, yeah, you got the drones, but you also have these surveillance boxes, and that Seattle City Council decided, listen, you cannot put up things unless it's approved by us and vis-a-vis the people, and there was such pushback that the Seattle itself can't do this. Now, you can't stop a private company from doing this, but they're a little nervous about taking that information that they're being given by the Magnolia security forces.
Why does it make people uncomfortable that people want to protect their property and their lives?
Because they're spying on other people that may not need to be spied on.
Interesting.
That's the only
thing. So you're okay with the use of spy there, but not what the Obama administration does when it's gathering information on people that they don't realize the information is being gathered on them. So you use the term
John,
spy.
You're fusing two things.
I'm trying to define the word spy because it's going to be coming up a lot in the next couple of days with Horowitz's thing. So the question is when you drive into a neighborhood and we're collecting information on you, that's spying.
No, it could be. You asked what would be the objection. I don't share that concern.
Uh-huh.
The idea is that we have streets and I'm part of the older generation that just assumes now that everything is on tape.
Okay.
I mean, everything, no matter where I go in downtown, I'm in downtown Seattle all the time going to theaters and shopping, all these. So I assume that they could probably track my whereabouts. So the question is, when I just go to Magnolia, let's say I want to go to Magnolia to look at the beautiful views, the fact that they have my car or my presence on tape everywhere feels a little creepy, but not. I mean, it's I don't have a problem with that. It's like somebody looking out your your front room window to see who's in the neighborhood.
Yeah, so they have it here. They give you a nice little sort of cause and effect. So they show that there was a porch pirate went in, the car stopped, the person ran up on the thing, stole the person's property off the porch, drove away. The camera took a picture of the license plate. They plugged that into the computer, and it comes up that same car had come into that neighborhood twice.
Anytime, yeah.
Early in the morning,
you can do a search. And yes. By the way, any resident of Magnolia has access to this, so they can just watch hours and hours of the security tape. You can type in, I want, this particular address or this particular license plate or a description of some guy walking through the neighborhood. Has he? Oh, yeah, that car has been here three other times. It was here at 2 a.m. Uh-huh. And it was here at 10 a.m. the following morning, and it was here on the weekend or something. So you can track it down. Now, let's just get to some of the civil liberties concerns. Civil liberty advocates are concerned about that this kind of stuff could give rise to vigilantism and hysteria over certain types of crime more than others. Mm-hmm. It could be tools for discrimination. But the idea here, I think, is just that there's, now that we know they're doing it, why are they doing it? Why is Magnolia? They say Magnolia has the smallest level of crime, but has the highest fear of crime vis-a-vis how much crime there is. It's kind of like an oddity.
Well, they also have probably more to lose. They have more invested in their house. Their cars are worth more. They probably have stuff. I remember one time I complained to my dad, why do they keep breaking into my neighborhood over on Pine Street in Philadelphia? Yeah. He goes, I got news for you. That's where the rich people are.
Yeah, except that's not true. More crime happens in poor communities.
I know it does. That's out of convenience. You're just going to go down the street and rob the person down the street from you. That happens.
That's
I'm just saying,
the cameras should be set up, maybe.
Well, yeah, they could catch those folks, or you would then get people, the other criminals that have a car and are able to come to a particular neighborhood. They do this all the time. They sweep through Sammamish at least every 4 or 5 months and just go through and just whack as many cars as they possibly can and then take the stuff out. I guess the people of Magnolia figure, hey, it's the fourth district of the district that they have to try to cover. So the police have to try to get up into Magnolia, and they just figured, you know what? If they can't do it, then we'll do it.
We're rich enough; we can afford to do it ourselves. And the problem is,
I eliminate the thing about rich or poor because I think that creates a true bias where the person says, "Well, oh, that's just a bunch of rich people, and they're just trying to protect themselves, and they're all paranoid, and things are not that bad, and they are all whatever else goes with."
It's one of the ironies in the Seattle Times article that says it's one of the safest places, but people feel most fearful.
Right. Well, they've moved there and they have decided, I like it there. It's safe. Let's keep it safe because they can see the stuff that's sort of the flops and jets and that washes up on the shores of our broken system of people that continuously break crimes and go back out on the street
rich.
Again. And they just want to be able to protect themselves.
That's right. And it seems overly protective when it's not as big a crime. But as one of the experts points out, he says, but, you can't discount fear because that does affect your quality of life. So maybe their fear is out of, sort of out of context. But if they feel it, they feel it. And you can't,
Well, it's like if you live in a really lousy neighborhood and you can hear gunshots at night,
you
learn to sleep through it. But if you live in a rich neighborhood and the gunshots, oh, my God, it's all everybody talks about for the next 3 weeks. Right. Let's see. Pensacola attacks probed for terrorism links. So the Saudi suspects clashed with instructor. So we know a couple of things. AP has an interesting story that it was 2 days before the shooting. The shooter had a dinner party, invited a bunch of people over, and they watched a bunch of mass shooting videos.
That sounds like a hell of a dinner party.
Gee whiz. And then during the actual attack that took place, two of his friends were in the car outside looking in the window watching, and another one was outside of the actual classroom videotaping. So that's what we know, and now we know that the shooter, and they've also have, I think there's 10 or 12 other Saudi nationalists that are there on the base.
Nationals.
So they're getting all of them together, and they want to find out, did he act alone? Was he in concert with others? But they have officially deemed this thing as a terrorist attack, right?
It's a terrorist investigation. Meaning they're treating it as if it is. They haven't finally determined that. But he did post right before the shooting, some anti-American stuff on it. And they did another, if you're just looking for it, the problem is at this point, we're just at the gathering stage, so we don't know if any of this has any potency. He has been stationed here. He is going to graduate in 2020. We have a lot. We're doing this with a lot of different nationals from a lot of different countries. And apparently this is sort of like a common courtesy around the world of different military types training. In fact, they had the Defense Department secretary last night saying, no, this is a really good program. He said when he was in the military, he trained in Germany and China or something. I mean, the idea is that you sort of swap around. That's one of the things they said, that he goes back. He went back to Saudi Arabia in between the breaks. And when he came back this past February from a break, some of his friends thought that he'd come back more religious.
Oh.
Now, what that means, is that code for meaning he's more prone to terrorist activities? We have no idea at this point, but that's just one of the little pieces.
Defense Secretary was asked, and he still doesn't know why people were filming the shooting.
Some were detained, friends of his that were also on that base, as I understand it. And I also was told that some one or two were filming it. What's unclear is, were they filming it before it began, or was it something where they picked up their phones and filmed it once they saw it unfolding? That may be a distinction with or without a difference, but again, that's why I think we need to let the investigation play out.
But I mean, that would not be a normal response, to film one of your colleagues who's shooting Americans.
I don't know. I'm not trying to pass a judgment on it at this point in time. You know, today people pull out their phones and film everything and anything that happens.
He doesn't think the shooting is a reason to cancel the training program.
Yeah, that's what we were just talking about. Okay. Yeah, that he said it's really convenient and allows other countries to get a sense of the way we see the world, and allows us to see how other countries see the world. So he thinks it's a positive. Now,
what caused the spark? Was it the porn mustache?
Are you being funny?
No.
That is okay. So seven.
I'll tell you when I'm being funny. I'll shake my leg.
That's right. Well, the thing is, the way you threw it out there seemed it was dismissive. All they know about this guy is 7 months ago, an instructor, a meteorology instructor, made some crack to him about his porn stash.
Oh.
He has a mustache, and this guy was quite offended and took it up the chain of command, in effect. He filed a formal complaint. Mm-hmm. This was 7 months ago. They have no idea if this had anything to do with it, if that was the planting the seed that made him hate Americans.
His porn mustache.
We have no idea, okay. But he was quite offended. Listen, Saudi Arabia is a very conservative, you know, country. Pornography may be seen as the work of the devil, and to suggest somehow, I can see why he could take, offense. They said, well, if the professor apologized, would you accept it? And he says, no. So, I don't know.
Somebody was sharing stuff on Facebook, and one of our listeners sent it to me. It's a husband, I guess it's a mom and a dad, and there's somebody in the backseat of a car, and they're driving onto the base. Have you seen this video that's going around? And every single service man and woman is standing on either side of the road. It is, as they're driving, and there must be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these people. And they're all standing at attention, and they're saluting as they're driving in. And you can hear the dad trying not to cry, and the mother crying, and then you hear the father cry. Of course, the mother cries more. And this thing is just one single shot, the person sitting in the back seat with their phone as they are pulling onto the base. Oh, my God.
And why? And what was the context?
The context is I believe that's the mother and the father of the deceased.
The Navy guys that got killed?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And okay.
One of our listeners sent that to me. So on Sunday, when I was in a fairly good mood, I watched it, and then I wasn't in a good mood. Professional bridesmaids, Tom. You want to do that one, Airbnb, or the lady with the gun, with the bike?
Well,
what's your choice?
I'll take the second one.
Okay, so use Airbnb, Uber, or Lyft. Now beware, because apparently at some point you could find yourself sharing an apartment with strangers. The story has got a couple of holes in it, but basically the top of it is this. Some guy's sitting in an apartment which he has rented.
Three-bedroom house.
Yes, that's right.
He's been renting for 9 years.
He's had it for nine.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he notices there's somebody in the other room. And then in the other room as well, that now the house that he has been renting out has little sort of people living in the house with him, even though they're not his roommates. It has now become an Airbnb.
Unbeknownst to him, supposedly, this is where it gets strange credulity, but he said he had no idea. He'd been renting this house for 9 years, and all of a sudden these people showed up, and they were parked in his driveway and all of this, and they said, no, we're doing this. He contacted the landlord and said, yeah, this is what we're doing. So he went to the local TV station and complained about this, and
That's where I would have gone.
Yeah.
The local television station.
Well, I know, or Evening Magazine, and he made his complaint.
Wait, hold on a second. Would you ever do that? You got a problem? The first thing you do is go to the local TV station?
I think Jesse has managed to make an entire career out of that. What you realize is if you have no recourse, then go public. You know, go big.
Oh, I
think
I
that's it. So, and in response, you know what the landlord did because he went to the TV stations? He kicked him out. He evicted him. And now it's a full-blown, despite his 9 years of paying rent on a regular right. basis, it's now a full-blown Airbnb. The article just used that as an example of saying that this kind of world that we live in now where everybody, you know, people are, you know, take Lyft and Uber or use Airbnb, all this kind of shared economy business was great when it started out because it was kind of based on this intimacy. Oh, you know something and I know something. Hey, John, you can stay at my place. I'll stay at your place. This kind of this idea was like so great because it was relatively small and it was sort of like these face-to-face kinds of meetings. Now it's become the shared economy has become so huge that you're going to have if you have a million people using Airbnb, if you have 10 million people, you're bound to have these kinds of horror stories. And they say that's true. You know, like an Uber and Lyft, they have all these people right. are raped by
How
their
bad was the guy?
Drivers. What's
the
that?
other people that are living in the house? Were they really that horrible?
Well,
did
just,
his rent go down?
Apparently not, but we don't know those details. But he says they were eating his food, you know, and using his plates because he'd been living there alone. But I know once you adjust to it, I can imagine that. But he says a
couple of nasty sort of passive-aggressive notes above the dishwasher gets the job done. Or you start writing on your milk jug.
they just say there's now a dark side to sharing with strangers that hadn't cropped up early on when it was kind of the you know, sort of the counterculture, hippy-dippy sort of way to do things. Now it's become more corporate and people are using it and abusing it and, you know, just sort of a beware. By the way, they say these bad horror stories aren't going to hurt the sharing economy. In 2014, they figured it was $15 billion. By 2025, so not too long from now, it's expected to be $335 billion. Went from $15 billion to $335 billion in a decade.
Let me ask you to settle an argument from a long time ago at Ithaca.
Okay.
So we had five of us, five guys, all living in the house. Imagine how gross it was. And in the refrigerator, everybody threw their stuff in there. And then people would start to eat each other's, you know, yogurt or whatever else was in there, bagels and stuff. So this one guy had bought ketchup and mustard.
Uh-huh.
And then so we got a hot dog. It's ketchup. Yeah. And he's like, whoa. So then we decided that condiments, my thing was condiments are kind of public. It's like the sidewalk. Everybody gets the chance.
Okay.
Right?
I'm with you. Yeah.
And he was like, no, I bought that.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, but.
I know.
But are we all going to buy our own
five
ketchup?
Five bottles of ketchup.
Right.
Yeah. Makes no sense.
I'll give you some money for it. No, I don't want your money. And I said, what do you want? He goes, I want you to respect the fact that there's private property and not everybody gets ketchup.
I know. There is private property, but not everything is private property.
So where would you have been on the ketchup thing?
I'm with you.
Okay, good. Because what we used to do is take the top off and add water to it.
Then it's catsup. I love this song.
People are now suggesting songs that I think will break you, Tom, but clearly this one did not work.
No, this is my kids' favorite song when they were like three or four.
He won't have to use our dirty chimney flue. Just bring him through the front door. That's the easy thing to do. I can see me now on Christmas morning.
Everybody, but it is Christmas, and Tom made the mistake of telling all of us, I love all Christmas music.
I said I collect all Christmas music.
No, you didn't say collect.
No, I mean, I want to have as many varied versions of Christmas as possibly can.
There's no such thing as bad Christmas music.
That's true.
And then also, it's nice because Muckleshoot Casino knows that Rachel Bell's got a special place in her heart. Even though she's a Jew, she still loves Christmas cats.
And Muckleshoot Casino. I did cat yoga this weekend. There's a place in Seattle called the Meow Tripolitan Cafe.
Let's talk about Muckleshoot Casino.
Oh, okay. At Muckleshoot Casino is a cat-free zone, except for on Catterday when I do What do you want to talk about Muckleshoot Casino? They have great food, great fun, great festivities. It's the three F's of Muckleshoot Casino. My name's Rachel.
And then you went to a cat yoga.
Yes. So you're in this room, and it's filled with cats. It's not BYOC, like a lot of people think that it is. And then some of them crawl all over you, and it's a dream come true. And then at the end, they say, meow must stay. And they also call your hands and feet paws while you're doing it.
Oh, wow.
I love it. It's so fun.
How many cats were in there?
Probably 20. They're all up for adoption.
Oh, that is crazy.
Yeah, it's adorable. It is really joy-making. If you like cats and you like yoga, come see me, Rachel Bell, Muckleshoot Casino.
How small is the room? Is it tiny? Is it like 20 cats seem to really take over? Or is
no,
it big...
it's not like you've been kidnapped and put in a closet with 20 cats and your captor's like, do the downward dog. Which, by the way, they don't say downward dog. They don't like to use the word dog. So they just say downward. You know what you're supposed to be doing.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very cute.
So a lot of single gals all getting together there, huh?
Hey. Why do people have that stereotype? A lot of people in relationships love a feline friend. The two Fs, feline friend.
I was just trying to get you.
Okay. So if you work at the cat cafe, you may not want to date any of the cats. And that brings me to our next story.
Thank you.
So there's a story in the Wall Street Journal. Want to date a colleague? Think carefully. So I thought this was just going to be kind of a pop culture story about, you know, the dangers of dating your coworker. Because what if you break up and it's awkward and you have to see them at work the next day?
Yeah.
But of course, it wasn't that fun. It's a hashtag Me Too story. So they say in the age of Me Too, a lot of companies have gotten stricter about relationships at work. So there's all different levels of this. Some places actually require you to basically register your relationship. And a lot of this goes for the higher ups. So people that are in managerial positions or definitely for CEOs. Some places say like anybody who's in a relationship, you have to announce it. Some places say it's completely banned. And some places have the don't ask, don't tell policy. Just keep it secret. We don't want to know. If you break up, then we really don't want to know. But there's a place, a company called BlackRock Inc. And there, the bosses are required to disclose their relationships, whether it's a direct subordinate or anyone else in the company. And recently, a high-level employee did not disclose, and it was found out, and he was fired. It says CEOs at McDonald's Corporate and Intel Corporate have lost jobs in the last 18 months over, and all of this, by the way, are consensual relationships with employees. They just say there's too much risk, too much to lose. If there is a breakup, and then I'm assuming the woman decides that she wants to go after this guy and say it wasn't consensual, and then the company will be in some kind of trouble. I don't know how a company could be liable about the relationship.
Yeah.
That's where it gets a little dicey.
I think especially if there's a discrepancy between, if they're just colleagues, but if one is the boss of another, that's where I think they can be on the hook, and that's why they're getting nervous about these kinds of things.
Yeah. You've worked here for a while. Anybody ever asked you out and then you had to kind of shoot them down and then still keep
everybody.
So John wasn't
I've
the only one.
I've broken the heart of every man,
no, honestly,
woman, and cat.
I saw it actually happen to
don't
somebody.
Say it. I don't know what you're going to say, but don't,
we were
whatever
standing,
it is, don't
I was
say
standing
it.
There when it happened, not
oh,
to
yeah.
you.
Wait, you
okay.
saw someone ask someone out
yes.
at work
yes.
in the newsroom?
Yes.
No, you did
yes.
not.
Yes, and then
no way.
It was this really uncomfortable, oh, my God.
Oh, I can't wait till commercial break. There's been quite a few couples that have formed here at Cairo, and one of them was between our former boss and an intern that ended in marriage and three children. I don't think we have any rules here.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, no, but it wasn't when she was an intern.
Oh, yeah.
Let's just be clear about that.
Yes, she was. It doesn't matter anyway.
Okay.
Whatever.
The idea of asking the person out at the place of work and then them turning you down, it's brutal.
Yeah, like that is so risky. I have a friend who works here who waited for a colleague to take a new job, and as soon as she left, he asked her out because he just didn't want to have to...
And did she say yes?
She did, and they were a couple for a while. But when they broke up, he was really glad that she didn't work here anymore.
Yeah. So according to the stuff I had read, that just don't tell anybody that you're doing it. If you do go up to the person, say, well, here's the advice I found. This guy sitting there, look at this. He's a doctor. He's sitting on the couch drinking champagne.
Better. I do not want anyone to say, look, I'm interested in you, be it male or female, and say, I would like to get to know you better. I do not want anyone to be aware of this at work. It's nobody's business but yours and mine. And so if you feel the same way and you'd like to see me, then I would like to see you. But I do not want anyone at the office to be aware of this.
He's really emphatic on not anyone be aware of this. Tell no one where I am taking you.
That would make me nervous.
So he's sitting in this tableau that he's created on a red couch with, for some reason, a rotary telephone behind him and drinking champagne.
He also has a smoking jacket on.
I know. He looks like he's in one of those late night infomercials for 70s love songs.
Oh, my. I have a good story, but I'm holding back.
Okay.
Were you the one that asked off the calling and they said no?
No.
He
turned her down.
Okay.
You know who it was?
No, don't.
Come on now. I'm like a chicken with an egg stuck in me.
I've never heard that. I like that expression.
Just made that up.
It's
you can have it.
Very, very visceral.
With chicken with an egg stuck in him?
Yeah, I thought you were going to say head cut off. It's when you. I think you're going to zig, you zag.
That's what happens. Uh-huh. Do we have time for the one last story?
Yeah.
When you call in sick to Chipotle, what do they tell you to do?
Okay, so this was a story in Vice magazine. When you call in sick to Chipotle, then you are instructed to call a nurse. And this nurse will somehow verify on the rotary phone, on the table, behind the guy drinking the champagne who says not to date your colleagues. The nurse is going to try to somehow see if you have a hangover or not. And then if it's determined that you don't have a hangover, you are considered sick and you can take a paid sick day.
This
was released by Chipotle CEO Brian Nickel, who spoke at an investors conference last week, who probably really regrets saying this because this is what every headline on the story says. But when you get into the story more, there's no other details on it. Basically, what he's talking about is every time somebody walks in the kitchen to do their job, like mm-hmm. for the day, they have to go through a wellness checklist. So they make sure that they're well because they've had a lot of trouble with E. coli and the norovirus. I mean, in Ohio this summer, in one restaurant, 647 people got sick and they had to close down. So
why is it always Chipotle?
It was, you know, a long time ago. It was Jack in the Box.
I mean, there are a lot of other.
I know, but it must be something about how the food is being handled or the. It's normally goes back to the vegetables, right? Isn't that part of the problem?
I think with the, not the E. coli, but what's the other one? The vegetables,
salmonella.
I think you can't get that from a person. But what they're doing, and maybe it's working, is they're making sure that people aren't sick. And then they're using this new spray on all the tables that is supposed to kill norovirus. So mm-hmm. even if a customer comes in and then you sat at that table next, you could get sick.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's always from them or the food.
Yeah. Or what you could do is you could buy a box of tissues that Jacob and I found online. They cost $79. And each a tissue is infused with germs from someone else.
What?
Well, infused, I think they're just used to blow their nose by someone else. And the idea is that it's I think it's anti-vaxxers that were trying to pawn these off. And the idea is that that's how you'd, instead of vaccinating yourself, so you'd inoculate yourself with someone else's germs.
Wait, you're buying a box of used tissues?
I don't even know if it's a box. At least one, yeah.
How do the germs stay alive on the tissues?
I don't know that they do, but I think they're targeting.
And they want it because they're inoculating themselves by getting somebody else's germs?
Yeah, that's like my understanding, yeah.
If you wanted somebody, you'd say, hey, could you please sneeze on me?
But so you don't want to be vaccinated because you don't want the shot, but you want the same germs to go up your nose.
Yeah.
I get it. I totally get it. I think that's cool. I'm going to buy them.
So you'd have to keep your eyes open and your mouth open while I sneeze right in your face.
Yes. I want to be baby birded your boogers.
That's a dating ritual.
Meow.
All right. Good beginning. All right. Tom?
I was going to say, I know this, and then I realized, oh, no, I don't.
Stop it.
I got to say, it's
yeah, producer would be like, stop for a sec. Gary, if your voice is not there today, we can do this another day. You sound a little strained, a little hoarse, like it's kind of breaking up. Might be you at my headset. How about that one?
Hilarious. Well, I wouldn't listen to it a lot, but I'm glad it exists.
Well, Jimmy T writes in. He says, how about this? He says, play Yeah, it's Christmas time in Hollis, Queens from Run DMC and see if Tom likes that song.
It's Christmas time in Hollis, Queens, and I love that song. I play that every year. Jimmy, bring it in with you.
Jimmy wrote LOL.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to like that
one. Oh, it's fantastic. That's a great song. I wouldn't want to play it on our show because our show is about crappy Christmas music, and that's a great song.
Okay.
We should play. Okay, next break, we should find it.
Okay.
This time in Hollis, Queens, Run DMC. Fantastic.
Photographer reveals their tricks for getting the perfect family picture. This is a story that we've had sitting in our desk now for 3 weeks, and every time on Friday when we throw the papers in the air, Tom throws away his,
God,
and I have to reprint mine. And by the fourth time reading it through, I'm like, I have lost any passion or kind of tingly feeling I get from stories that I want to tell on the air, but photographer reveals how to make photos less awkward.
The perfect family picture. I think there's a lot of good advice here. First off, because people always look terrible when they're formally, you know, standing around. Okay, smile, everybody. So one of the tricks that a professional photographer has when he has a big group of people, pretend the shoot's over. Just do the shots and they say, okay, that's it. And everyone immediately, kind of relaxes. And then you just take a bunch of shots. They don't know. You know, you hear the clicking and you're not really aware of it. You often get infinitely better shots. So the idea, just pretend the shot is over and people aren't formally posed. Second thing is they talk about how to deal with a sullen teenager. And every family portrait or group portrait, you always got at least one. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be here. They said, what you do is you take the first shot. You get everybody together, including the sullen teenager. You take that first. And then you let the sullen ones move off to the side and grouse and, do whatever they want. And then take all these little ones up, the smaller group portraits. And then at the end, by that time, the sullen teenager, and this is going to work with the kids too, the sullen teenager may be, well, I guess it's not so bad. And because we didn't press him into service for too long.
He, will come back or she will come back.
At the end. And they say, this is the real trick about youngsters. If you ignore youngsters, like we're talking about maybe like 3 or 4 or 5 or 6, where they just don't, they're fussing and they just don't want to. If you just ignore them and have the photographer deal with the adults and all this, and they're just taking pictures of the adults, the kids will eventually go, hey, how come they're not paying any attention to me?
Right.
I want to be in the picture. And I think that's a clever way of getting them involved. If the adults are doing it, I want to do that as well. He mentions going for gags. This I'm not sure would work, but he claims this one photographer takes a bunch of grass, stuffs it up his nose, and then when he takes a picture at you, the kids just crack up, sometimes even the adults. And then this is the one that actually makes so much sense now. I can't remember now, which I have 4 brothers, and so we all had our portraits, like when we were 1 or when we were 2. And
for some groups reason, or doing solo?
No, in solo things.
Sears?
Yeah, probably a Sears. Yeah, it was late 50s or early 60s, I'm sure. But then in some of them, like one of us, we're holding a ball or we've got like a stuffed animal or something. And they say the key is keeping idle hands occupied. That kids love to move around, touch their face and everything else. He says if you give them something to hold, suddenly they're relaxed for a photo because their hands are not in inappropriate places that could ruin a photo.
Uh-huh.
And then finally, this seems like a cheat, swapping heads. You take a great group portrait and there's one person who's
looking away.
Yeah. What you do is you take a multiple group portraits, and then you just take that digitally and put it
find the one you like.
That's right. So, not too bad advice, I'd say.
I hate now that people are doing here we go, and now do a goofy one, and then everybody's
Because your goofy was the first one.
No, I just...
Forced
goof.
Yeah.